Did you know, as a member of Capital Area District Libraries, you can save over $900 a year by just borrowing one item a week? Download books, music, movies, and magazines to your mobile device, or borrow outdoor games like cornhole and ladder ball, which are great for tailgating. Sign up for a free membership at cadl.org/card. Some restrictions may apply. Capital Area District Libraries. Check out everything right here.
Welcome to CattleCast with Capital Area District Libraries Executive Director Scott Dymstra.
Welcome to CattleCast. I'm Scott Dymstra, the Executive Director of Capital Area District Libraries, and we have a great episode for you today, so let's get started. Mike McFaul, co-CEO of Bigby Coffee and author of the book Grind, joins me now on CattleCast. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it. It's great to be here.
How did you go from being a barista to helping run a successful coffee business?
The most inspiring part of it is that I fell in love with the coffee business. I really, really enjoyed waking up in the morning, going to work, and making people happy. And it was a great pleasure to know that I was taking people and putting a little spring in their step in the morning as they were off to their daily lives. But the second part of the answer is I really began to sense an opportunity in the coffee business. You have to remember, this is 1996, so it's a long time ago in coffee. Thankfully, that came to fruition.
You have been running Bigby with your partner, Bob Fish, for more than 20 years. What's the secret to creating and maintaining such a long-lasting business relationship?
A business partnership, especially one that's 50-50, meaning we both have the same vote, is very, very similar to a marriage. To be successful in a marriage, you have to be respectful. You have to take into account the other person's needs and nuances and quirks and desires and so on. But then I think probably the biggest thing that we do to be successful is we communicate often and regularly. That doesn't mean we don't argue. I think one of the traits to a successful relationship is the ability to argue and to figure out how to argue. And so we've been able to successfully argue for over 20 years now.
Bigby will be celebrating its 25th year in 2020. How difficult is it to start a coffee business today?
Well, I don't think it's any more difficult to start a coffee business today than it has been. Anytime you start a business, it's difficult. But there's a marketplace out there for anybody that does it well. And I think that's the case in just about any industry or business startup, is if you do it well, generally speaking, you can pull it off. And so, I mean, there is more competition today, right? So we have to acknowledge that. There's more competition with companies like mine, Starbucks, and so on. But there are very, very successful and good, strong coffee companies out there that are starting today and doing well.
Why did you decide to write the book, Grind?
Well, I had a background in academia. I was interested in becoming a teacher. That's where I was headed when I started at Bigby, and I was working on a very specific research project at the university in order to prepare to go back to graduate school. And then I got sidetracked with this coffee idea, and so 25 years later, here I am. But I've always had interest and passion to write and to teach, and so this is me tapping into that passion. And I think, you know, the nitty-gritty of my book is I've done a lot of reading in this space of entrepreneurship and business startup. I don't find very many books out there that capture the essence of what it's like to be in a startup. If somebody reads the book, I want them to walk away with the feeling of what it might be like to be inside the startup of a business. And so that's what I tried to capture with it.
How is it different than other business titles?
Most of the books I read have been written by two major groups, not all of them, but two major groups. The first is very, very successful, uber successful entrepreneurs who are looking back at business startup from 30,000 feet in a private jet through rose-colored glasses. And the stories I find to be somewhat trite and not real. And then the other group of people that I read on business startup are academics who are studying entrepreneurs. In fact, I can't think of too many books, any books that I've read that were written by people that are still very, very close to the startup of their business. And that's what differentiates my book, I hope. My business today, Bigby Coffee, what I do is I support people in starting businesses. So day in and day out, I was just having a conversation with a woman this morning who's in the middle of her startup, right? So she just opened her Bigby Coffee and I was in a conversation with her. And so what I do day in and day out is I support people through the act of opening their businesses. I'm still in it. I still see it. Every single day I'm dealing with it. That's what I think makes my book different in relation to business startup.
What are the two common mistakes people make when starting a business?
Well, I think the first is outsized expectations. you're probably going to be disappointed because you're not going to be meeting those expectations. And the problem with disappointment is once you start down a path of disappointment in relation to your business, that has dramatic impact on the business because your mentality is very much the mentality of the business. And how you present yourself and how you present the business is how the business meets the world. Making sure that you keep your expectations in check and hopefully you can begin to exceed those expectations is critically important. The other thing that I advocate, people need to spend time, and it's chapter one of the book, doing due diligence on themselves so that they understand the impact that their idiosyncrasies and their quirks have on the business. And then they need to make sure that they're mitigating those. And if you aren't willing to do the work to figure out your own idiosyncrasies and your own quirks, that's going to get in the way of the business.
What are some of the obstacles today's entrepreneurs face?
Themselves. And everybody wants to blame lack of success or failure of the business on outside forces. But from my experience in watching hundreds of people start businesses and some become wildly successful and others fail, the common theme, the common thread there is the operator, the owner of the business. Sure, sometimes it is outside forces that impact a business and make a business fail. But the biggest obstacle in my mind is the mentality and the approach of the entrepreneur.
And what's next for Bigby Coffee besides your anniversary?
Well, we're in the middle of a whole bunch of things. We just sold our first cups of coffee in Asia about a month ago. We have one store open in Indonesia in the Sumatra region, and we have three more under construction there right now. And so I'm really excited to see how that does. But then probably the biggest thing that we're in the middle of is we're 25 years old, we have to modernize. And it's one of the things that I think most every business out there is dealing with right now, or at least businesses that have been around for a long time. And so the next 12, 18, 24 months is really about getting ourselves on track with modernization and understanding how technology is impacting our business and then how we can leverage technology to bring value to our customers through that technology.
Finally, we'll end with a library question. What are you currently reading, watching, or listening? Now, besides your own book, Mike.
Currently listening to a podcast of the class that I'm teaching at the University of Michigan. I'm a co-instructor there, and we did a podcast of 13 episodes. It's called Finding Your Venture. So I'm listening to all 13 episodes. My co-instructor did the podcast. I have to say it's brilliant. And so he brought in outside speakers on every subject of the 13 classes. And so that's what I'm in the middle of listening to. And then I'm reading an Edward Deming's book, The New Economics for Industry and Government.
You can purchase Mike's book at grindthebook.com or borrow a copy from Capital Area District Libraries. Mike, thank you so much for joining me on Cattlecast today.
Scott, thanks for having me. I love what you guys are doing with this. It's really cool. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
More Cattlecast after this.
Capital Area District Libraries Craft Fair is Saturday, October 26th from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. at the downtown Lansing branch, featuring a diverse array of handcrafted items and much more. Admission and parking are free, so check it out on October 26th.
I'm serious. You're outnumbered. They're faster. Most of them are stronger. They can run you into the ground. And if you're going to keep it under control, you're going to have to win the battle here. He touched a finger to his forehead. You get me? Mind war, I said. Wax on, wax off.
That's a clip from the Marvel audiobook Spider-Man: The Darkest Hours by Jim Butcher, which is now available through our Hoopla digital collection. The narrator of the audiobook is Jack Malosh, who joins us now on Cattlecast.
Hey, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for joining us.
Good. Thank you so much for inviting me here today.
How did you go from attending MSU down the road from us to lending your voice to audiobooks?
Oh, gosh. Well, to be totally honest, I had a lot of help and a lot of luck. I had a professor in the theater department who professionally narrated, and she gave me a lot of great advice. And when it came to getting to do it professionally, it came down to I knew a guy who knew a guy who knew a guy who got me an audition, and that kind of got me started with Dreamscape anyway. A lot of it, honestly, it was good timing. It was knowing the right people and good luck, basically.
What did you do to prepare for the Spider-Man role?
Oh, I tried my best to try to prepare as I would for any other part. There was a bit of a pressure on it just because it was freaking Spider-Man, you know, but
no pressure. Yeah, right.
But I did my best to try to approach it like I would any other part. Process that kind of goes into when you're preparing to do an audiobook is kind of like you, first of all, you should read the entire book from cover to cover, from beginning to end, because if you don't, there will be things that surprise you and you will have to go back and fix a lot of things. So it's important to just read the whole book from cover to cover. And as you're reading, what I do is I will highlight all of the dialogue and I'll have a different colored highlighter for each character. And as I'm going through, I'll read some of the dialogue aloud to myself as I'm trying to figure out the voices for these characters, play with a lot of different things until I find something that A, feels right for the character, and B, is something that is comfortable enough for me that I can sustain for a lengthy period of time. It's important to be gentle with yourself, because if you're going in for an 8-hour day in the studio and you've chosen a voice that sounds like this, it's going to wear on you pretty quickly. So I recommend just picking your voices wisely in that sense. As you find words that you don't know the meaning of or don't know how to pronounce, look them up. It's well worth the trouble, so you don't have to go back and fix things too much. Also, it's super important to stay hydrated. Again, you're going to be speaking for a very long period of time. It's important to be kind to your voice by keeping things well lubricated, as they say.
In addition to playing the role of Spider-Man in the audiobook, you are also a big fan of Marvel. So how big of a deal is it that Marvel audiobook content is now available to our library members?
Honestly, I'm super psyched for that, because I know a lot of people who don't necessarily have the time or energy to read these stories. And so to give them the option to have these stories read to them and exposing them to these stories that they otherwise wouldn't have been exposed to is just awesome. I'm super excited to be able to listen to more Marvel titles on my commutes myself.
Why do you think Marvel content, including the movies, are so popular?
Oh, gosh, there's a zillion different answers to that. One reason that I'll focus on here is that I think Marvel content is as popular as it is due to the excellent crafting of their characters. These are people that, yes, have these incredible, amazing superpowers and abilities and do incredible, amazing things with them, but they're also very relatable. In the case of Spider-Man in particular, I think a lot of folks can relate to kind of not being with the popular crowd and sure, kind of having to deal with the struggles of high school and the bullying, etc. In many of these stories, there's always something with these characters that resonates, and I think that's part of what makes them so beloved.
Sure. Now, these audiobooks will feature several iconic Marvel stories for the first time in audio. So besides your own, which ones are you most excited about to listen to?
Well, to be totally honest with you, I don't know the full lineup of what Marvel titles we have coming.
Sure.
But I would love to listen to a Captain America title. I think Steve Rogers is super neat, and I would love to hear a Captain America title.
Good recommendation.
Yeah.
What other audiobooks can our listeners find you on?
Odd Exam by Piers Anthony, which was a short kind of sci-fi novella. There's Easy Prey by Catherine Lowe, which was more of a high school drama. I got to work with two other very talented narrators on that, Nick Mandeli and Elizabeth Cottle, and they were both phenomenal. Loved working with them. And you can also find me on Never Rest by Marshall Thornton. It's sort of a modern take on The Tale of Frankenstein with a queer twist. I really enjoyed reading it.
Now, this one is kind of a dream question. So if you were able to produce the next Marvel movie, what hero or heroes would it feature?
Ooh.
No pressure.
Well, off the top of my head, I would love to see a film that focuses on Nightcrawler. I think he's super interesting and neat, and I would love to kind of get more on his origin story and all
of
that.
That'd be a good one. That'd be fantastic. Yeah. Finally, we like to end with a library question. So what are you currently reading, watching, or for audiobook listeners, listening to?
To be honest, I'm terrible at keeping up with things. Mm-hmm. I like to get started on things, and then when life gets crazy, I have a tendency to not pick them up again for a long period of time. But I'm currently trying to catch up on a series called My Hero Academia. It takes place in a universe where almost everyone is born with superpowers, and they're called quirks in this universe. And it follows the journey of a quirkless boy named Izuku who desperately wants to be a superhero. And All Might, who is the number one hero at the time, who trains with him to help him achieve that goal despite all the odds. It has some really, really well-written characters that I found I just couldn't help but root for. And if you like superhero stories, I think you'll like My Hero Academia.
Good recommendation.
Yeah.
Jack, thank you so much for joining me. It's great talking
to you.
Scott.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
That was Jack Malash. He is the narrator for Spider-Man: The Darkest Hour, which you can check out now through our Hoopla collection.
Did you know, as a member of Capital Area District Libraries, you can get special offers on select shows at Wharton Center and Detroit Performance Venues, including the Fox Theater and Little Caesars Arena. Sign up for a free library membership at cadl.org/card or by visiting one of our 13 branches. Some restrictions may apply. Capital Area District Libraries. Check out everything right here.
Welcome back. I'm truly proud of the great services offered by Capital Area District Libraries, and to discuss a couple of them is Thais Rousseau, who is our Associate Director of Collection Services. Welcome to the Cattlecast, Thais.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
What are some of the digital services our listeners should check out?
Well, there are two that have had updates recently that I think our listeners will be really excited to hear about. Mm-hmm. The first is Canopy, which is our film viewing service. There is Kids Mode and expansion of Great Courses Access. So with Kids Mode, kids can watch as many videos as they want in a month without it counting toward your 8 checkout limit. And similarly, Great Courses, you can really take a deep dive into any course you're interested in because you can watch those with unlimited access, also not counting toward your 8 checkout limit. I think that members are going to be really excited about that because it was the number one requested addition that we've been hearing from people about Canopy.
That sounds like a great update.
Pronunciator also has a really nice update. They've added what they call their personalized language courses. These give learners the ability to quickly and easily create custom language courses that match their personal interests, occupation, with 60 occupations supported, learning goals, age group, commitment level, and available time. So you can design your own course anywhere from 4 weeks to a year in any of 99 languages, and they can be learned in 62 home languages. For example, a firefighter or a nurse could design a language course just for them to help them to speak with people that they meet in their work.
So a great tool for a professional in their work or also just for someone learning a new language.
Even kids, people just for fun. And it's a great English as a second language resource as well.
Some of our listeners might wonder why they have to wait so long for an ebook, why it takes so long for their hold to arrive. Could you explain a little bit about this?
I think a lot of folks don't realize that the library pays for each copy of an ebook or e-audiobook, just like we do for each copy of a print book that you might check out from the library. So You're just waiting for all those people ahead of you in line, just like you would for a print book. We've seen a kind of troubling trend when it comes to access for libraries, though. For example, Macmillan Publishers, which is one of the 5 major publishers in the United States, announced that beginning November 1st, they're going to limit public libraries to just one copy of a newly released title in its available format. Then there will be an 8-week embargo on purchasing additional copies.
Oh, so that just having that one title is going to really make a long hold queue.
Exactly right. So you might think, well, it's really long because we have 13 libraries along with our mobile library here. But really, because we're part of a consortium for our OverDrive or Libby ebooks, that means that there are 24 libraries that might be contributing to this. Though we add extra copies just for our readers, And we try to keep that. We have what we call in libraries a hold ratio. That means that for every 5 or so people that sign up to want to read something, that we add an extra copy. And keep in mind, we pay 2 to 3 times the publisher's price that a consumer would pay for that same title. You're going to have to wait a lot longer if we can't add had those extra copies until 8 weeks later. Just to give you a couple of examples, Becoming by Michelle Obama, the audiobook still has 133 holds from cattle users.
Wow.
And Where the Crawdads Sing, 122 cattle holds on the ebook and 73 holds on the audiobook. So realistically, we could see people having to wait instead of months could take a year.
Just because of that embargo.
Exactly right. And really what this does, Scott, is doesn't acknowledge the important part that libraries play in the publishing ecosystem. We generate a lot of interest in books through our displays, our advertising of our digital materials, by talking about new titles and really playing up interest among our users. In fact, recent surveys have shown that a lot of adults buy a book after they first borrowed it at the library, more than half. Really, libraries aren't preventing authors and publishers from making money. We really help to encourage people to buy more books. So
that's some great analysis. Our Library of Things collection continues to grow in popularity. For those who don't know, please tell us a little bit about the collection and some of the popular items that can be checked out from it.
So everyone knows they can borrow books, audiobooks, music, magazines from the library. But the Library of Things embraces the mission of lifelong learning and community connection by offering items that help people learn new skills, explore areas of interest, help with everyday tasks, or provide opportunities for meaningful interaction with others, including their own family. There's also a try before you buy aspect to a lot of the items, or the opportunity to provide access to many things that a lot of our community would never have a chance to use otherwise.
That's great. So again, library card saving you money.
Absolutely. And our emphasis is on high quality items. So we often have a higher quality item than you might be able to purchase personally. Our most popular items still include hotspots, of course, the metal detector, and the button maker. People love being able to make their own buttons. In August, we launched Library of Things Junior, which is designed for ages 3 to 12. It has a price cap on the value so that kids can check out their own items. And the emphasis is more on educational value, but it's what I like to think of as education disguised as fun. And some of our most popular releases so far there are the coding toys, like the Botley robot and the Code and Go mouse robot, as well as MagnaTiles, which are such a simple building tool.
Yeah.
But they really encourage spatial awareness and mathematical skills. In fact, after we launched Library of Things Junior, our Library of Things collection went from averaging around 600 circulations per month up to 702
items.
Oh,
that is fantastic. Recently, the Hazlet and Stockbridge school districts were added to the library's Student Success Initiative. Talk about this great initiative and how it benefits area students.
Sure, this is really exciting. All students in a district are eligible for a library account using their student ID or username when they participate in this initiative. The accounts are automatically updated through a release of directory information, and it allows all students to check out three books, audiobooks, or magazines at a time, plus use all of the library's digital resources. They've been really grateful for this opportunity to use the library, and it allows the library to truly be a partner in students' education. The information and resources at CATL expand and enrich the resources at school libraries and help students get more information for projects, explore their passions and interests, and read for fun.
Great. And it actually shows that the library card being used towards the academic achievement, correct?
Absolutely.
Under the third grade reading law, this is the first year where if students are not proficient in reading by the end of the third grade that they could be held back. What are some of the ways CATL is helping students meet the required benchmarks?
I think of us doing this in three main ways: our resources, events, and community outreach. Mm-hmm. When it comes to events, everyone's pretty aware of our story times. Those are really wonderful tools for encouraging early literacy and helping families to get their kids ready to read. We also have a very robust collection of picture books and early readers that help kids, and some special things in our new Library of Things Junior, including the letter construction kits STEM folktale kits that combine reading and science in some really fun ways. Simple or sight word learning locks where kids can match up a key and a lock with the word and an image that match it. And a lot of the board games, along with launch pads, which many of them have an early literacy focus. And then finally, for community outreach, we've worked hard with the Great Start Collaborative and Ingham Intermediate School District to develop the early learning calendar and family literacy calendars for kindergarten and first graders to expand that to second and third grades in the future. These provide simple and meaningful but fun activities for every day that families can do together. They're shared at our branches, but they're also shared widely at the schools and, in fact, are even used as a training tool at Head Start's home daycare providers and home visiting programs, which really expand our impact to those families who need a little bit of extra help the most.
Sure, that's great. And it shows just that it's not just the teacher and the student or the student and their families. It's the community coming together to support the students.
That's right. All together, we can really make an impact.
Sure, that's great. But this has been some great information, Thais. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you again for having me.
To learn more about these and other services, visit CADL's website, cadl.org.
Capital Area District Library's Craft Fair is Saturday, October 26th from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. at the downtown Lansing branch, featuring a diverse array of handcrafted items and much more. Admission and parking are free, so check it out on October 26th.
This is a CattleCast Extra.
My next guest is a nationally recognized, award-winning photojournalist and member of the Michigan Journalism Hall of Fame. Her latest book, The Queen Next Door, Aretha Franklin, An Intimate Portrait, is published by Wayne State University Press. Linda Solomon joins me on CattleCast. Thanks for joining me, Linda.
Great to be with you, Scott.
Let's get started. How were you first introduced to photography?
I was first introduced to photography by my family, who actually gave me a camera when I was 5 years old. So it was the most special gift because it's not a toy, so you don't get tired of a camera. You continue to grow with it because there's always something you want to document, and I was always the one in the family documenting every birthday, every holiday. The family relied upon me, and I'll tell you, it just inspired me forever because my parents showed their respect for my work, and I continued to pursue my love, and I've never stopped loving it from the moment that I received that camera when I was 5 years old.
Oh, that's great. Elizabeth Taylor, Robert Redford, and Diana Ross are just some of the famous personalities that you've captured in pictures. How did you become a celebrity photographer?
Scott, you know, that's such an interesting question. I think growing up in Detroit inspired me to photograph celebrities because we could go to the state fair and see Diana Ross and the Supremes, or we could go to a record store and wait in line and meet the Four Tops. So I think growing up in Detroit with all of the great musical talent that we had was just a way for me to say, this is what I want to do forever, because I would have my camera with me. In fact, I have photographs taken of the Supremes when I was a child. So with that said, I think just the wonderful way that we have to experience our musical superstars here in Detroit by the access that we have inspired me to continue to pursue my love of photographing celebrities.
And how did you meet and begin to take photos of Aretha Franklin?
Well, Aretha was always my favorite, but when I was a kid, Aretha had already moved to New York and then to Los Angeles, and she had so many hits in the 60s, and I was just one of those fans that loved R-E-S-P-E-C-T, and I just always would listen to her and admire her and everything she did for the civil rights movement. I mean, she is an inspiration in every possible way, and I always wanted to meet her as a journalist. So when she moved back to Detroit, which was in 1982, I had heard that she was going to be on a local talk show. And I had a column at that time in the Detroit News, and I called the producer and I said, may I come to the studio to introduce myself and hopefully photograph the Queen of Soul?
Now, Miss Franklin used to say, "I am the lady next door when I am not on stage." Was she a lot different in her personal life?
She certainly was very different. She used to do her own grocery shopping. I will tell you, I used to see her at the neighborhood Kroger all the time. And one time I was in line and I said to the cashier, "Do you know Aretha Franklin is in the produce aisle?" And the cashier said to me, "She's always here." So she was so unlike the way some people might say a diva. She was not a diva. She was completely her authentic self living in Detroit, and she could go to the places she loved. She loved the Big Boy, and she loved the local delis, and she was always with her family. She would never go anywhere without her family. First and foremost, my book shows Aretha's love and dedication to her beloved family, and I was so lucky to have known them. And her brother Cecil Franklin, the Reverend Cecil Franklin, was her manager. And he was the one that would invite me to cover so many special things that were going on at that time in her life, the concerts with James Brown, with the Rolling Stones, and music videos. And she wasn't leaving Detroit during those years, and everybody had to come to Detroit to record with her, perform with her. And her brother Cecil invited me to capture some of the most special times in her career, and certainly I will be forever blessed that I was able to know her and know the family and to observe her. And I was never, let's say, in her face with my camera. I would just take a few photographs, and then I would let her just enjoy, if it was a birthday party or a Christmas party she had invited me to, I would just let her mingle with her guests and enjoy it. And then, of course, the photos that I had taken, I would publish one or two. So the photos in the book are exclusive photos. At that time, no one had a cell phone. No one was capturing these wonderful, beautiful occasions in her life. So they are rare photographs, and they show the side of Aretha that maybe you haven't seen. And it's a side that is devoted to her children, devoted to Detroit. And she was our treasure, and we're so lucky that she was our queen.
What are some of your favorite memories about photographing her?
I think my most favorite memory would be the opportunity to capture her during Christmas. Aretha loved to host her holiday party, and she would produce all the music herself. So she would start with an orchestra on her driveway, and then she would move to a mariachi band, and then Sinbad would perform, and Peebo Bryson, and only for about 30 or 40 people. But she loved to just enjoy Christmas with her family, and often she would join her sons and sing a carol, and her parties were just incredible. And to be able to see her with her sons, I will tell you, because you are being broadcast in Lansing, that her son Teddy is a graduate of Michigan State University, and when he graduated, his mother gave him the most amazing graduation party. She invited the entire Michigan State University cheerleading squad to their home. And it was incredible. And those photos are in the book. And she decorated her home in green and white. She had streamers and pom-poms. So you could see Aretha was the lady next door when she wasn't on stage. And that is her most famous quote.
And you've done a great job of selling the book already, but if someone is not convinced, why should they pick up a copy of your book?
Well, this is a chance for you to share in the most special moments with the great Queen of Soul and to really see her heart, because she was having fun. In every photograph, you can tell she just loved being with her family. She loved giving back to Detroit. There are photos of her answering the telephone during a Easter Seals telethon. Can you imagine calling to make a pledge and you hear Aretha Franklin's voice? But that's the woman that she was. She was devoted to Detroit, devoted to her family. And I think your listeners will just enjoy seeing her and sharing her life in candid photographs that really express the Queen Next Door.
Another passion of yours is the Pictures of Hope Project. Can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Thank you so very much. I have been able to work with children and youth who sadly live in homeless shelters. And I encourage the children to capture their feelings of what they're hoping for with a camera. And Walgreens has graciously donated cameras to Pictures of Hope, and I've been able to bring the program to 52 cities, including Lansing and Flint, and children living in the shelters have been able to share their heartfelt hopes and dreams. And we create cards with the children's photographs, and 100% of the proceeds go right back to the shelters. And many of our mentors, including Chief Justice of the Michigan Supreme Court, Stephen Markman, and Congresswoman Brenda Lawrence, and the Fire Chief of Flint, and the Police Chief of Flint, have taken time to mentor the children that we help in the shelters. And they go off with the kids and show them that their dreams are right there in front of them, not only to photograph, but to achieve.
Oh, I want to congratulate you on that project because it is such a moving project.
Thank you so much. I've met so many wonderful kids. And we've had a college president who happened to see a story on Pictures of Hope. It was featured on NBC Nightly News for Making a Difference. And the president of Otterbein University reached out and said, I want to help kids who only dream to go to college but could never afford the opportunity. And we have been able to grant 5 full tuition college scholarships to first-generation students who are now attending college on a full tuition scholarship, and it's called the Dream Scholarship.
Oh, that's some amazing
and
work.
And I am so grateful to Dr. John Comerford, who happened to see the story and wanted to make a difference for kids who deserve a college education.
Oh, wow. It's truly some amazing work.
Thank you.
How can a picture impact your life?
It can impact your life because, first of all, it brings back the most beautiful memory. I encourage people not just to share photos, but to print them. Because when you save the photographs in an album, your life is right there in front of you. 40 years from now, you can look back and remember the special times that you've been able to capture in a photograph, and your photos will bring back every memory. When I was doing this book on Aretha, many of the photographs were captured almost 40 years ago. But if I didn't have the photograph, I might not have remembered all of the detail and all of the wonderful things that I shared with her. And I'm so grateful to that. You know, I must tell you one other little secret about Aretha. A few years ago, I received a Facebook request from someone I did not recognize. And then a phone call came in, and it was from Aretha. And she said, Linda, I sent you a Facebook request and you haven't responded. I said, well, did you use your name? She said, no, I did not. She said, told me the name that she did use. And I, of course, became her Facebook friend. And after she passed away, I went back to read some of her beautiful posts about trying to find a cure for cancer. She was very, very candid in her plea for scientists, she said, please get together and find a cure for cancer, the dreaded disease that had taken her life. But when I looked back to read her posts, I also looked up to see her friends, and I was so surprised that the great Queen of Soul, an international treasure, had only 22 friends on Facebook. And that was her personal Facebook. And I was so honored that she would consider me one of the lucky 22.
Finally, we like to end with a library-related question. So is there a book that, or a movie, television show, or music that you're currently reading, watching, or listening to that you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Oh, that is so kind of you. You know, there are so many books that I'm reading and so many movies, I have to think of the one I'd like to recommend. I think that, you know, for your listeners, I like to read nonfiction a lot because there's so much we can learn. And I just feel that pick up any book about someone you admire that they've written and just enjoy and share their life with your friends, share their life with your family, and encourage everyone in your family to read, because this is so very important that we share the interest of reading together and sit around a table, just as a book club would sit around a table, and share the stories that you're learning and experiencing in the books that you're reading.
Linda, thank you so much for doing that. And it's truly been a pleasure speaking with you today.
Thank you so much.
The book is The Queen Next Door, Aretha Franklin, An Intimate Portrait. Purchase a copy where great books are sold, or click on the link in our show notes to check out a copy from Capital Area District Libraries.
Don't miss another great interview. Subscribe to the Cattlecast podcast and share it with a friend.
Did you know, as a member of Capital Area District Libraries, you can save over $900 a year by just borrowing one item a week? Download books, music, movies, and magazines to your mobile device, or borrow outdoor games like cornhole and ladder ball, which are great for tailgating. Sign up for a free membership at cadl.org/card. Some restrictions may apply. Capital Area District Libraries. Check out everything right here.